Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we are focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Everybody, welcome back to the Drive On podcast. Today, my guest is Paul Lawrence. Paul is an Army veteran and also served as the Undersecretary of Benefits at the Department of Veterans Affairs. During his time with the VA, he worked to streamline the bureaucracy to help veterans get the benefits that they apply for quickly and accurately. Paul is also the author of the book, Transforming Service to Veterans. In this episode, we're going to talk about Paul's time at the VA and how he's helped veterans along the way, and as well as a little bit about his book at the end. So welcome to the show, Paul. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Hey, thanks, Scott. Thanks for having me with you. Yeah, it's an interesting story. I grew up in an Army family. My father was a career military officer. He was in the Army. He was in the Signal Corps. We moved all around the world doing the Cold War thing, lived in Europe a couple times, back and forth. You know, I was actually born in Japan. So I left after a year, so I don't remember anything of it. So basically, it seemed natural that I would join ROTC when I was in college. I did. I joined Army ROTC. I delayed my going in so I could go on and get my PhD in economics at Virginia Tech. And then I went into the Army. So I did my 3 years. I completed my ROTC requirement. I got out. Then I moved to Washington and became a consultant to the government, primarily working in accounting firms, consulting to the government. And so that's where I was when, you know, someone said, hey, you should apply for this cool job at the VA. And that's how I became the Undersecretary for Benefits. So I would definitely say being a veteran and being in a military family really kind of informed my thinking. And really, while it wasn't all my life, it was a significant part of my life. And some of the things I still remember my father taught me, and I still remember, I think about all the time. And that was some of the things that led me to want to serve.
And I think it's important too, coming from a military background, to kind of have that understanding of, you know, what is important to the veterans, and, you know, having that in your family history, you know, and living the military life, you know, moving, you know, from one base to another and, you know, moving all over the world, you kind of get a sense for that probably from an early age, where some other people who may not have had that experience, they wouldn't have been able to experience that, and wouldn't have that understanding necessarily of what it's like to be in the military and part of a military family, especially.
Right. And to move, to live in foreign countries where they don't speak English, where you learn different languages and see the whole kind of thing, where you deal with people who do not like Americans and you don't understand why. So yeah, it's really eye opening. And it's just, in retrospect, it was, you know, pretty amazing experience. And I know my father thought as much too. He had come from a small town outside of Boston. He was the first person in his family to go to college, you know, and now to be traveling all around the world was just like, wow, this is pretty amazing when you think about where he came from.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that's true with some of the people I served with as well. They never really left kind of their hometown area. And right. Then, you know, all of a sudden now we find ourselves in Afghanistan and, you know, other places throughout the country as we're training and whatnot too. Yeah. So, you know, it's definitely interesting to see that with you know, other people as they progress through their military career. But let's talk about your time with the VA. Now, the VA, it's obviously a big organization. It's responsible for many different programs, not just the benefits like, you know, you were a part of, but could you give an overview of kind of what the VA does and specifically what you were responsible with the Veterans Benefits Administration?
Sure. Sure. A good way to think about the VA is sort of like, you know, about 400,000 people, a little bit less when I was there. And it's divided into three, sort of, they call administrations, but think about them as operating companies, right? And so the largest is the Veterans Health Administration, all the doctors, all the hospitals, I forget the number, 500 hospitals, the largest integrated medical system in the United States, right? Sees everybody and does that. So most people can envision that picture. They are large in terms of people, but actually when you add up all the benefits, the Veterans Benefits Administration is actually larger between the budget as well as all the money paid for benefits. So it was about 25,000 people. That was what I was in charge of. And it does what it says, the benefits, disability compensation, pension, fiduciary, home loan guarantee, right? No money down, home purchase, the GI Bill, the education benefit, VR&E, Veterans Readiness and Employment, and I forgot one more, insurance, a large insurance company with it. And so basically takes care of all the benefits. And then the last one is the National Cemetery Administration, which is pretty clear, whatever, runs a series of cemeteries for folks to be honored at the end of their service to all of us. And so it's much smaller, as you can imagine, but they're really, really good at what they do. They win all the customer satisfaction scores for best organization, like anywhere, public or private. It's a pretty amazing organization. So most people immediately think about VA, they think about the hospitals, VHA, but the first interaction when you become a veteran is actually with the Veterans Benefits Administration, which is why it's so important as folks come into the system that they have a very positive experience. And often disability compensation is one of the hardest things to start with. So it's really one of the challenges to make it a good experience. So people come away going, yeah, my military service was great. When I became a veteran, that was also good too. So that's really the challenge.
Yeah, and it is a challenge. And I think back to my transition when I got out of the military and I was, you know, looking into, you know, what benefits were available. And at times it felt like I was drinking from a fire hose.
You know, that's just right.
So much stuff to go through. And, you know, we even had those classes where they sit you down and they say, okay, these are the benefits that you're eligible for. And here's how you apply and this, that, and the other. And you go through it at, you know, a sprinting pace and it just, it's almost overwhelming. And so, you know, from my side of the table, from the, you know, the veteran side of the of all of this, it really, I felt like I needed to go and do some of the legwork myself and actually understand what's available to me. And you know, all the information, all the paperwork was great. But I needed to like sit down and actually try to understand all of it, because there's just so much. And the, no fault of anyone who tried to send me through all of this this stuff. It's just it's a lot of material to go through in a, you know, a short period of time. So you know, in your book you talk about your initial assessment of the Veterans Benefits Administration when you first you know, got into that role, and there were some things that were working well and others needed some improvement. Can you talk about how you made this initial assessment and how you prioritized what needed to be done and the improvements that needed to be made?
Sure. Well, one of the things I went through the confirmation process is the Veterans Benefits Administration has a lot of information about how well they're doing. They produce a lot of information, how many claims are being processed, how many things are being done, GI Bill claims are being done, how many people are getting pension and the like. And it was easy to read reports from like GAO, the Government Accountability Office, or watch hearings, congressional testimony, and see what was going on. So I had a pretty good sense of what was taking place by in each of the benefits, they call them business lines, each of the business lines that was going on. So I had some initial hypothesis about how well things were going or not going. I also knew that when I showed up in 2018, especially in disability compensation, there had been a period of time in the 2013 and 2014 period where the backlog of claims that were over 125 days waiting to be resolved had been really, really large, like more than 600,000. And it had just gotten down to about 70,000 when I showed up. So I knew it was an organization that had made tremendous improvement. But I did have some questions about how well some of the other business lines were going. So I spent a lot of time early on talking to the leaders, getting a sense for who really understood their business and the like. And so I got a pretty good sense early on as to who was doing a good job and who, quite frankly, probably was in the wrong job. I noticed that there were a lot of promotions that were tenure-based versus merit-based. So I had to deal with that. And then, quite frankly, the one thing I never understood was coming from the private sector was what I'll call middle level layers. So, for example, Scott, if you were running a business, you had pretty good responsibilities. In the VBA, when I first showed up, you would report to a deputy undersecretary who would then report to me. And I thought, well, if you're really good at your business, you don't need these folks between me and them to talk about stuff, right? They aggregate information and sometimes you just lose information. So I removed the whole layer of management and converted those positions to help solve more veterans' problems. So I thought that was really helpful to empower people to run their business. Because I mean, I think everybody who does stuff, whatever it is, you always think you're worthy of more responsibility earlier than you get it. You always think, if I would just get these like knucklehead bosses out of my way, I would do a better job. And I believe that too. And I did that. So I really sought to, you know, remove layers, find the people who were really good, and quite frankly, had a passion for caring about veterans. I just noticed that after a while, people kind of gotten into a lull and were comfortable, what I call coming up short or not really adhering to the law. They weren't doing fraud or whatever, but they weren't really kind of following through on the promises. So there was a little bit of that. And so quite frankly, I knew my time there would be short, and I really wanted to, you know, help veterans and have the service be better. That's part of why I took the job. You know, you said, why do you take these jobs? Well, I was naive. I wanted things to be better, and I was going to go do things like that, streamline, move people around, and get them really focused on getting benefits to veterans.
Yeah, and that's really encouraging to hear that, you know, there are people, you know, at the VA, especially in the benefits side, because like you said, that's a lot of times the first touch that people have with the VA after getting out of the service. And it's encouraging to hear that there are people who are out there working to make these improvements. I know, you know, personally, I've applied for benefits, and in the first time that I applied for any sort of benefits, I think the initial application that I put in was sometime in like August of that year. And it wasn't until February or March of the following year that it ended up getting approved. But then the second time I applied for something else, that was service connected, it was a matter of weeks that it got approved. I think it was like just before Halloween that I applied, and it was before Thanksgiving that it was approved and everything went through. So, you know, just from my own personal experience, and it was around the time frame that we're talking about here while you were in there as well. And so I know that there was definitely some improvements made just from my own personal experience. I can't necessarily say for everybody, but it definitely looked like things are moving in the right direction anyways, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's good to know. And to kind of echo your point, I mean, by and large, the folks I found at the Veterans Benefits Administration, well, first, 55% of them are veterans. So they understand it's the highest percentage virtually anywhere in government. So it's all literally veterans serving veterans. And by and large, they really want to do the right thing. There's no incentive to deny. Everybody thinks, well, they're just going to deny. They get more bonuses if they deny claims. That's not true. But the system is hard and complicated. The requirements from information to prove it is just complicated. So sometimes it just gets into difficult situations. But it's intended to be, like you say, present the information, demonstrate that you're worthy of this benefit, and then get our veterans the benefits, right? And most people wanted to do that. They wanted to be seen as working for an organization that's really good, not one that everybody kind of makes fun of. They want to be on the winning team, just like everybody, right? And so it was natural to talk about, you know, the publicity should be about how good the organization is performing and how satisfied veterans are. And like you say, how quickly they're getting their benefits versus having to explain difficult situations and why things weren't working. So that was the intention.
Yeah. And from what I've seen, like I said, it seems like things are moving in that right direction. But something that you sort of briefly touched on is some of the difficulties that come into getting some of these benefits approved and some of the requirements and all that kind of stuff. And one thing that I think would help it to understand a little bit better from the veterans' perspective is some of the congressional mandates, and you talked about this a little bit in your book as well. The difficulties that the VA faces when they have to implement these new mandates that come down from Congress. Basically, if you're making a product in a factory and you use the same materials and the same process each time, you can pretty reliably come out with a consistent product time after time, you know. But when you are administering benefits, it can sort of be thought as a repeatable process, assuming nothing changes. You know, applicants fill out the necessary paperwork, submit the documentation, and, you know, either meets the criteria or doesn't. But then you throw in a congressional mandate and things change, and all of a sudden all the processes and everything else. So you make the analogy of building a plane as it's flying, you know. So what were some of the challenges that the VA faced and will continue to face, I'm sure, in the future, you know, as new mandates come into play regarding implementing these new changes?
Well, you're right. It's exactly that. So the repeatable processes, that's what goes on, right? Get claims, do whatever. They're a little bit different, but you can get good at it. And then what happened while I was there, which was good because you remember the former president really put veterans at the center of the administration. He came in and said, I want to fix a lot of these things. Well, the famous thing he talked about, the Accountability Act, where he'd run around and say, you could now say you're fired, right? But that was followed after that were two laws that really did affect VBA. One was the appeals modernization, which made it easier to appeal your decision, as well as the Comary Act, or the Forever GI Bill. So those basically changed major processes that went on at VBA, and those laws have due dates, right? You know, within one year of this law, you will have changed the GI Bill program. Within 18 months of this, you will have modernized the appeals process. So when I got in, we were coming towards the end of the last year, of the last part of that first year, to modernize the Comary Act, the Forever GI Bill, and it was not going well. They just had sat down the wrong approach, the wrong contractors had been hired. So I got to, you know, deal with a very messy situation and say, hey guys, this isn't going to work. We have to start a new plan and kind of start over. So that one took a year longer, and that results in hearing and scrutiny, but eventually it all got figured out, and everybody was owed money, was back paid, and generally worked out pretty well. Appeals modernization was a really big change and a really good change before if you were unhappy. And this is what's funny, Scott, about VA. Unlike virtually any other government agency, you are unhappy with any decision VA has, you can appeal it or have somebody review it. Most people sort of say, I mean, try doing this at the IRS and see what happens, right? So but you could do this, but the process was really long and onerous, like 3 to 7 years. So a new process was designed, and it's kind of clever. It's no longer an appeal when you show up back at VBA. It's a decision review. So you can have a higher level review, right? It's another set of eyes like the NFL, or supplemental claim, which is you produce more evidence, right? Those are happening very, very fast. That was a really big change, but a good change. And then the last change I dealt with just towards the end of 2019 was finally got legislation to deal with the Blue Water Navy, Agent Orange, that folks who were exposed to herbicide, who would serve 12 miles off the coast of Vietnam during the conflict, had been exposed to Agent Orange. So they finally got benefits, and that was a long time coming. So that law had to be implemented on time. So really, you know, you sort of have people who are really good at the process, like you said, doing the same thing over and over again. And now they have to figure out how they're going to change this. It's a very different skill set. It's normally under tremendous scrutiny because the laws have time frames. You know, everybody's, it's sad. There's a large constituency rooting for VA to fail. So they're sort of watching, you know, when is the Titanic going to hit the iceberg? So it was really a lot of pressure to get it right. And so in those three instances, with a separate reset schedule for the Forever GI Bill, all of them were done on time. All of them began exactly as it was planned. So it was really a good news story, and one that, quite frankly, I don't know what was expected, because again, I think people were thinking, well, it's VA, it's VBA, somehow this will turn into a mess and everybody will be unhappy. So yeah, but you're right. It's funny. It's just not what you imagine, right? You know, oh, there's major legislation. Well, that's good for veterans until you realize, well, yeah, but somebody's got to go actually do that, right? And just to kind of give you an order of magnitude, the Forever GI Bill, part of the changes were like how the veterans who use the GI Bill got the monthly housing allowance. So to demonstrate the order of complexity, in the original GI Bill, the Servicemen's Readjustment Act of 1944, the housing allowance is described in 44 words. So it said, you will get a housing allowance, blah, blah, blah. Okay. In the Forever GI Bill, the way the housing allowance done, over 4,000 words. So order of magnitude of complexity that had to be put into computer programs. And as you imagine, there was a whole bunch of problems. So yeah, that's kind of it. So the good news is, there was more legislation to improve services to veterans. The challenge was, of course, to actually go and deliver the benefits. And one of the things I really came away with thinking, it's easy to promise more benefits to veterans, right? Everyone feels good. All Congress people like to do it. It is another story to actually deliver those benefits. Or stated differently, if you promise benefits, but they don't get delivered, you really haven't done anything for veterans. And that's kind of what I really had a real good sense of.
Yeah. And that's the thing, when Congress, you know, passes these laws and they get signed and, you know, passes the bills and they get signed into law. And, you know, now you're sitting there with hundreds or perhaps thousands of pages of, you know, documentation that you now have to go through and convert that into a computer program or something, you know, somewhere along the way to now have the people who work there be able to utilize that and turn that into the benefits that go out to the veterans. It's a big undertaking. And
it's actually, you know, it's actually kind of the opposite. The laws tend to be real short and you have to figure out like what it really meant. Right. And then you have to go and sort of like, well, what were you guys imagining when you were writing this? Right. So it's actually sometimes just the opposite.
Right. Yeah. That's true too. And so, you know, maybe you're even having to fill in the blanks of, you know, what was actually intended by some of this legislation that gets passed. So, you know, the reason why I brought that up is because, you know, like you said, there's veterans working for the VA. Those veterans want the benefits to, you know, go to the right people in the right circumstances. They're not sitting there, you know, holding back and trying to, you know, screw somebody over and not allow these veterans getting the benefits that they deserve. But at the same time, there's real people behind this, and it's not just a computer program. There's somebody who has to interpret all of this and create the systems and everything behind it. And so, you know, I wanted to highlight that part because I thought it was really interesting in your book. I wanted to highlight it because a lot of times, you know, we can get mad at, you know, a computer, you know, when it's not giving you the answer that you want it to. But, you know, a lot of times we don't understand that there's a person on the other end of that computer who is doing their best with what they have to work with. And sometimes the timelines, you know, may or may not be, you know, the right kind of timelines for implementing some of this stuff. And so maybe having a little bit of compassion, a little bit of patience with some of this stuff is in order, you know?
Yeah. Well, I sort of agree and disagree. Right. So I think that when you're delivering benefits to veterans, right, I mean, their right to be demanded, it is like, hey, I expect this fast. And, you know, we all live in a world where things were getting faster, right? Pizza in 30 minutes, packages in 2 hours and the like. So I would say VBA was getting better, but the world was getting better faster. So it looked like they were falling behind. So, you know, right. I think it's a reasonable expectation that veterans should get world-class service from the VBA, right? So that's what it is. Difficult, but it can be done. Like you pointed out, your second time through the system, your claim could be done much faster. So, you know, it's sort of like both parts of the equation working together. If veterans produce a good claim and they can get help to do that with all the information assembled and ready, VBA should be able to go through it lickety-split and say yes or no based on the information. Where things get kind of crosswise is it's incomplete. And so somebody's got to go find their military record, right? Or the documentation about their injury wasn't done because, you know, back in the day, they just sucked it up and took aspirin and they don't really have evidence that their knee was hurt or whatever. So that's where things get, you know, kind of squarely. And then of course you can imagine somebody's been horribly wounded, has lots of issues that got to be dealt with. And so it's just more complicated. So it all makes sense, but people get frustrated, right? And they get disappointed, right? And while 75% of the time they do get yeses, 25% of the time they do get no's. And so no one likes a no, no matter how elegantly it's presented. So it's just kind of how it all works. But I do think that the goal should be, you know, really good service for veterans, and the waiting is just really not acceptable. And that folks should always be vigilant to try to minimize that.
Right. Yeah. No, well put. I think that makes a whole lot of sense too. And you talked about, you know, sometimes the paperwork's incomplete or they don't have the right documentation and things like that. And you worked with some of the veteran service organizations that are out there to help improve the relationship between those organizations and the VA and trying to help facilitate the process of the veterans applying for the benefits and everything. Talk about that process and kind of what the goal there was in terms of improving that relationship and how that's helped, you know, with the overall process for the applications and everything.
Yeah, so it was really interesting. We all know about the American Legion and VFW. You've heard of, maybe you played American Legion baseball or some such thing like that, right? But, and they're large organizations. You can see the guys, men and women with the funny hats, right? So you really, I got the chance to work with them to better understand, you know, how they represent and advocate for veterans. And so they are very much involved in the claims process. They have service officers, veteran service officers, who will help veterans fill out their claims. They understand the VBA processes. And so they're invaluable. And realize that's kind of what I realized, which is these are essentially, you know, virtually extension of VBA at one level in terms of how much they help. Now they, of course, also heard about all the warts and were good at reminding, you know, VA and the VBA, hey, here's where things are coming up short. But when agendas overlap, when people were working on the same problems, they were invaluable. And so I found the time meeting with them, especially the leaders. I try to meet with the leaders once a month of what they call it the Big Eight, you know, the ones that really were the largest and, you know, able to process claims, really valuable. And so that was good. And even when they told you stuff you didn't like, you really got a sense of these are informed consumers. So I like that a lot. And that's probably something I would point out to folks. If you are like looking at filing a claim or, you know, getting help interacting with VA or VBA in particular, you can go to these organizations. They have service officers and at no charge, they will help you through the process. So, you know, it's, in many ways, it's kind of like going to a specialist. You can learn it yourself, but they've been doing this over and over again. And so that's one of the things I would tell people all the time when they say, wow, this stuff is really hard. Get a service officer from a VSO or quite frankly, from your state. Each state has a Department of Veterans Affairs or some version of that. They also have service officers to help them. So I found them really invaluable and they were great partners and they would tell you history about stuff and how things came to be. And, you know, I found a very positive relationship.
Yeah, and that's a great thing to have too, because you know, from your side, it streamlines the process. It gets the right paperwork, you know, filled out, and the right documentation and everything like that is being submitted. So that helps the claims process and approvals or denying, you know, in either case, but it's able to get through much quicker because you're not waiting for, okay, now send in this extra piece of information and, you know, all that extra stuff. So I think that it's a win-win really. It's a win for VBA because, you know, you're able to process these claims much quicker, but it's also a win for the veterans because they get their answer, you know, a lot quicker as well. And they don't have to, you know, jump through all the hoops of trying to learn the whole process when there's someone else who's out there who already is kind of a subject matter expert on the topic.
They've been doing it. They know what a complete form, they know the mistakes people make, they prevent you from doing it, and they help make sure you get the decisions timely. So no, that's really, really good. And many of them offer a wide range of services. I don't want to do a commercial for them all, but they have auxiliary groups for families. I mean, they really are veteran service organizations. Now, I know they're going through transition too, because it's previously tended to be an older group. And I think some of the post 9/11 veterans are not, this is, you know, desirous of interacting in certain ways, but, you know, eventually it'll get all figured out as well. But yeah, they're there and they can be helpful as well as the states, like I said.
Yeah, absolutely. And for the post 9/11 veterans who might be listening to this, I would encourage you to reach out to some of these organizations, even join the you know, VFW or American Legion or, you know, any of them. Again, not giving a commercial necessarily to all of them, but, you know, reach out to them because there are older people who are members of these organizations and they've been through a lot of this process before and other things that you might be going through as well. And, you know, it just helps to have that experience available to you. And, you know, you might be able to pick their brain and get some of that information out of them as well. So, you know, it's not going to hurt anything, you know, to reach out to them, you know.
And they know that they need to recruit younger members. So mm-hmm. The ones I visit a lot of the posts and the chapters back in the day when you could travel, and a lot of them were understood. It's like, hey, the lifeblood of our organization is post 9/11 guys. men and women. And so I met like where the commander was a post, the first post 9/11 commander they had ever had, right? Recruiting folks and the like. And so, you know, yeah, some of the stereotype is true, but a lot more of it was not as people began to. So I would say, you know, kick the tires, give it a look, but I think you'd be surprised. And, you know, like you point, history, fellowship, camaraderie, information, you know. So for example, a lot of them have emergency funds. You know, you're down on your luck and you need $500,000. A lot of them give that out just because they care about veterans.
Yeah, and that's a great service that's available to veterans as well. And that's amazing that there's people out there who are doing that type of stuff. So what would you say to someone who maybe had a bad experience with their benefits, or, you know, something along those lines, you know, a few years ago, before, you know, all these changes that were made to kind of streamline the process and make things better for the veterans? Maybe they got turned off by the VA. Oh, the VA is not going to help me. They're not going to process this claim, and, you know, things just didn't work out for them for whatever reason. They got turned off by the whole process. What would you say to someone who maybe was in that situation and given the current state of affairs with the benefits and everything now?
Yeah. So I would say if it was probably more than 4 years ago, I would say, come on back and give them a second chance, because things have gotten better. Okay. And I would say, well, what happened? Was it an incomplete claim or something that it couldn't be figured out? Like you point out, Scott, go to a veteran service organization, get someone to help you to have the best interaction possible. But I would definitely come back. And if you had a bad experience, again, thanks to the new process to appeal, the appeals modernization law, I say, you know, file an appeal and get somebody to look at it again. So I would definitely encourage people to connect with the VA. Okay, yeah, everything isn't perfect, but it is like the VA. And as a veteran, you should figure out what's there for you, because there's a whole range of benefits. Hearing about people who had a bad experience was very frustrating. But another thing that I learned was folks who just never interacted with the VA. Well, I never knew I was allowed to do that. I sometimes didn't even know I was a veteran. Like, I didn't know I could have my college paid for. I didn't know about all these things. So it was really disheartening to hear about folks who had a bad experience, or they would say, I'm fighting with VA, as if that's kind of the verb you're supposed to use. But others like, I didn't even know. There's so much benefits. Congress has been so generous for folks to serve that the I don't know one was equally frustrating, right? So I take your point at the beginning of the show that it is a fire hose, but at least there's stuff there, right? And the internet and resources and whatever. So, and I would just say, compared to when I got out, when transition was, here's your DD-214, goodbye, okay? It's better. It's still got a long way to go, but, you know, so, but yeah. So come back in some form, come back.
And what about the people who maybe they had maybe a knee injury or back injury or something like that in their service, and they don't want to file a claim because they feel like, well, I'm going to be taking that away from some other veteran.
Yeah. So that's a really good point, Scott. That's absolutely not true. Okay. The way Congress has allocated the money is benefits are, it's just an increasing pot. So if everybody filed for their back and whatever, the number of dollar available goes up. It's called a mandatory spend. You have to go spend this money on veterans benefits. So yes. And so there's two components of that. The way we like to talk about it is, are you the same person exiting service as you were going into service? Hearing, knees, back, ankles, other sort of problems. If you're not, file a claim. And while you might only have minor injuries or disabilities now, later things get worse. So we would always say, come back every 3 to 5 years. Your hearing will get worse if you were in the artillery, for example, around aircraft, or kind of things that make some sense. So yeah, it's really sort of intended to help folks. And again, the difficult experience was people who show up now, they're, you know, served in the service in the early 20s. Now they're 40 or 50. They, my hearing's gone, and trying to link that to your service is harder. Whereas if you just done it earlier, you would then go in and say, hey, I need an increase, as opposed to starting. So I would tell people the money is absolutely there. You're not taking it for anybody. This is stuff you earned. The language around benefits is earned. It's not entitled. It's not whatever. It's earned. And these are things that are written into law for our veterans. And that's why I keep going back to service in the military of our country is a very noble thing, and benefits and the VA is there to reward our veterans.
Yeah. And I'm glad that you made that point and clarified that for anyone who might feel like they're taking away from somebody else or things like that, because I've heard that so many times from people who have an issue. They just refuse to apply for the benefits because they feel like if they take it, then somebody else who might be worse off isn't going to get the benefits. And I know that it's not true. But it's good to hear from someone from your side of the house where you know more about how the benefits work and where the money comes from and how it's allocated and everything like that. So people who are listening, if you have any of these issues, anything that's service connected, just like what Paul was saying, if you are different coming out of the military than you were going in, apply for those benefits because you're not taking it away from anybody. You are just basically applying for what you deserve, essentially, right?
Yeah, you are. That's right.
Absolutely.
And if they have a thing, they could use a search engine. Top 10 reasons why people get disability compensation. Let's see, knees, ankles, noise, like PTSD, these things are just real well known. You might go, yeah, that does happen. I mean, it does happen. And so be aware of that,
Yeah, absolutely. So take a look at those, top 10 reasons, any other issues that you might be having, look at those two. I know the VA has a whole schedule of different conditions that are, there's various ratings for and everything like that. I know the math on those ratings could be a little confusing and cumbersome, but there's still, something out there for you if that's what you're eligible for, I should say. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So. And it's funny, we won't touch on the math, but that's one of the things where complexity is just overtaking it. It's just hard to understand it, but it all makes sense when you think about the layers and layers of rules and bureaucracy and court cases and whatever, but it is one of those complexities. But yeah, I think your point's a good one, Scott. If you think apply for benefits, there's no harm in doing it. If you think it wasn't right, come back and have the decision reviewed. That's certainly a reasonable thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I did do an episode about, I don't know, maybe 6 or 8 months ago or so on veteran benefits and how that math actually works out. So I'll link to that in the show notes. Yeah. So if anyone's confused about that, doesn't know how it works, I'll link to that in the show notes so everyone can go back and take a look at that episode as well. Paul, I'd like to give you the opportunity to share with everybody where they can find your book, learn more about what you do and where to find you on social media and things like that as well. And anything else that we didn't cover that you might want to touch on as well.
Sure. So I'll do all that. So my book is called Transforming Service to Veterans. You can find it on Amazon, as I tell my kids, great Christmas gift. Okay. And I wrote the book to just explain like what goes on at the VBA, what my experience was, how benefits are actually done. And like you pointed out, Scott, what it is to sort of go through this process and, write about what takes place in government. And I did it in part because I was really, disappointed by people who go to government and then later talk about stuff they could have done when they were in government, but didn't. Right. So everything in the book is stuff I did. I had to deal with difficult situations. I had to move people. I had to fire people. We improved performance. And I wanted to write about that. It's really in many ways a good news story. I had a great team there. I mean, I was the only political appointee in the organization of 25,000 people. So it wasn't like, I could do this all myself. So it was a great team. And I think people are interested in how does government work, they might find it interesting. Now I spend a lot of time on LinkedIn. I try to write stuff about veterans, explaining benefits. So if people want to follow me, Paul R. Lawrence, follow me. I try to write about, something to benefits or some really interesting veteran organization that is serving veterans. I spent a lot of time trying to get people to understand there's lots of veterans out there who want to help other veterans, you know, and so to try to connect that as well. So that's what I do. And finally, I guess the last thing I would point out is sort of, you know, how benefits are supposed to enable our veterans to pursue what I talk about as their American dream, right? Life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. And that service and the benefits are really supposed to accelerate you. So let's kind of decompose that for a minute, right? So just think about your friends who didn't serve. Well, now they have to go, they want to go to college. They have to save or borrow the money. But if you've served in the military, you can have your college paid for through the GI Bill. So you leave college with no debt or earlier than your friends who were not veterans, okay? If you want to purchase a home, you know, and you're a civilian, you have to save for a down payment, which can be tens of thousands of dollars. If you served in the military and you're now a veteran, you can purchase a home with no money down. This is unheard of kind of stuff, right? So thanks to your service, you can get educated for a good job, okay? You can have a home, live in a good community. You're two steps ahead of everybody, and those are probably big steps, right? And so as you think about what service is supposed to do, I think the benefits are a really strong component to setting our veterans up to really succeed. And that's why I think so many states actively want to recruit veterans to their state. They know they'll buy a home, they'll be part of the community, they'll be great employees. For the most part, by a far margin, veterans are generally the top employees in many organizations. Veteran unemployment is generally lower than the national average. So again, you kind of plan all these things right and take advantage of and manage it correctly, this can really be a powerful, you know, powerful thing in driving your life. So again, the service isn't supposed to be like, okay, I did it, now I forget about it. It's like, no, it's supposed to be something that kind of really pushes you along and really helps you going forward. So as people listen to your podcast, Scott, and hear about benefits and hear about things and a lot of the stories about people, you know, succeeding, I mean, I think there's a connection there, and I encourage everybody to figure out, you know, what of those things they've earned really can help them kind of move forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, you know, it sort of kills you to hear the stories of the people who aren't moving forward and not taking advantage of some of the things that they earned through their mm-hmm. service. And, you know, I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing, you know, especially sentiments like that, where, you know, it's encouraging people to go out and use these benefits that they fought for, that they earned through their service, and that they, and I say fought for, I don't mean that they fought for the benefits, but they were fighting, you know, for our country, and they earned these benefits through that service. It's theirs, that they've earned it. You know, I really do hope that people will use those benefits to, you know, like you said, kind of get a jump start, you know, in their lives.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. It's all there, you know, find someone to help you. Others will help you. You know, it's important that veterans connect.
Absolutely. So, Paul, it's been a pleasure speaking with you today. For everyone listening, the book, again, Transforming Service to Veterans, it's on Amazon. Take a look at that. Go get the book if you're interested at all in how the government is running the benefits side of things. You know, how Paul you know, had worked through the VBA, you know, take a look at LinkedIn, follow Paul on LinkedIn as well. And I'll have links to all of this in the show notes. So anyone who is looking to grab a copy of the book or follow Paul on LinkedIn, you know, just go ahead and click over to the show notes, and we'll have all the links for you there. So thank you again, Paul, for joining me. Really appreciate the time and the opportunity to speak with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Scott. Thanks for having a great conversation.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Drive On Podcast.